Hello, and welcome to today's edition of the Health and Wellness Podcast. I'm Mayan Hoffman, Head of Strategy and Chief Health Analyst at the Jerusalem Post. And normally I have with me Rosella Turkoden, our health reporter. But instead, today we have a very special guest, Professor Cyril Cohn, the head of the Immunology Lab at Bar-Ilan University, also a consultant with the Health Ministry, top analyst in the country, really, when it comes to coronavirus, everything related to immunology and cancer. And we're here today, of course, to talk about a new variant that has hit the world as well as Israel. We have at least two confirmed cases as we're speaking now, another 14, 15 already being investigated, and that is the Omicron variant. So, Professor Cohn, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me, Mayan. It's a pleasure to receive you, to have you here in Bar-Ilan.
So I want to talk right away about this variant. You know, the world has sort of gone up in arms. Israel shut the skies. How afraid should we really be? What do we know so far?
We are concerned. I don't want to say that we should be hysterical, we should give into panic, but we are concerned. The point is that this is the first time we're seeing such a mutated variant. Just to give you an idea of what we're seeing right now, usually with the former variants, we saw 1, 2, 3 mutations, perhaps 10 mutations in the spike protein. Now we're talking about almost or even more than 30 locations, 30 changes in that spike protein. And therefore, it is unknown what, I would say, the effects of those mutations will have on the, dynamics of this infection. And therefore, in, times where we don't know, I think it's best to take some precautions. And I think that we're not the only one. Several countries around the world have been actually taking some precautions. The WHO has issued a warning. So right now we have three main, questions that we are asking ourselves. As for every variant, first question, is it more contagious? Mm-hmm. Second question, is it causing a more severe disease? And third question, will vaccine work against this variant? And if yes, what extent?
Now, already the variant is really spreading around South Africa. There's been quite a number of cases there. Does that give us any indication, any answers to some of those questions?
Yes. So the initial assessment, but again, it's not like every case in Africa is sequenced. But the assessment is that based on more or less a few hundred cases that were identified in South Africa, and the fact that they went from, in a few days, from 200 to 300 daily cases to 2,000 to 3,000 daily cases, and we're talking about within an interval of 10 days, this is quite concerning. So we can't say that this is only due to the Omicron variant, but there is no doubt that the Omicron variant is playing a role in that surge. So right now, people are kind of trying to understand if or what is the real, potential of that variant, you know, in terms of infection. Don't forget that South Africa is an under-vaccinated country with only 20 to 25% of the population vaccinated. So we're asking ourselves what will happen if such an Omicron variant will start spreading in Europe, in the US, in Israel. What will happen when it will encounter a barrier, a wall of vaccinated people?
Right, which could, I guess, be very different. I mean, and especially, you know, Africa, not only South Africa is around, you know, 21%, I believe, is the latest number, but most of Africa is much less than that even. So if this spreads around the rest of the continent, I think that that's even more striking, I mean, given that I think the average is 6%, there are people under 1%, countries under 1%. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit about that. You know, actually, let's talk about Africa. So Africa has not been able to vaccinate for a number of reasons. Is that the reason for this variant happening in Africa? Why Africa?
You know, variants have been developing with or without vaccines. You know, even before the era of vaccination, you know, with COVID, meaning before December, we have seen some variants, you know, appearing. Why Africa is a great question. Of course, one of the problems is, the fact that if you do not give access to vaccination to people, less people will be immunized, and then more people will be contaminated, more variants can arise, because each of us, technically, when we are contaminated, can become a factory of variants. So this is one thing. Second thing that is very strange about that variant is that, as I said, the number of mutations it has. And I'm saying that because usually we're talking about around 50 mutations all in all, you know, in this variant, 30 in the spike protein and some 18 in other places. We know that true COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2 virus can mutate, but on the other hand, the rate of mutation is 1 every 2 weeks. That's more or less what we can see from the databases and the sequences that are gathered from all around the world.
For example, that's relatively low, right? 1 in every 2 weeks.
It's not that low, actually, but it's not what we're seeing here with a variant with 50 mutations. So technically, that would mean that it started mutating something like 2 years ago. And that doesn't add up with what we know. So here is a question. Why are we seeing so many mutations at once in a variant? And we can say that partly because perhaps this variant has been developing for a few months under the radar until it acquired enough mutations to be what the Omicron is today. The other thing is that it could have incubated in people with a defective immune system, like, for example, in the case of AIDS patients. And in that case, what happens basically is that variants may thrive in those people. Why? Because in normal people, not vaccinated, the infection lasts around 5 to 10 days, meaning that this is a lapse of time that the virus has to change until you infect perhaps someone else, perhaps, yes, perhaps. In vaccinated people, it would be perhaps a day, meaning that you will be infected, but then the virus will not thrive as it would be in a non-vaccinated people, unvaccinated person, and you know, it will be a very short time. So again, that's why we are saying that it's very important to get vaccinated in order to prevent the spread of variants. But in immunosuppressed people, you might end up with a kind of chronic infection in which the virus lingers for a month or so. And during that time, it can actually kind of dodge and the immune system and accumulate more and more mutations.
Because it's like replicating within your body over and over again.
Yes, over and over, because the immune system is not able to stop it or doesn't have the most efficient way or antibodies or T cells or whatever arm that is necessary to stop the virus available. And because this is defective, you can end up in a situation in which after time, and we know that, I would say, we know those conditions also from other diseases like, for example, cancer. Okay, so I don't want to enter in the theory, but what I'm saying is that Africa should definitely be, granted access to vaccines as fast as possible, because this is a global fight. And only when all the population, I would say, of the world will have access to vaccines, I think we can stand a chance of minimizing the number of variants we'll see.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because just this morning, you know, it started to come out that the country, that Israel, is considering giving millions of vaccines to Africa. It's not confirmed. You know, I spoke to the foreign ministry and they said, well, we're considering it, but nothing is really decided yet. But this is actually like a pretty important decision for Israel to make twofold. You know, on the one hand, there's a Hasbara aspect of this, a PR move. You know, one of the main way that Israel has been hit, we've had such a successful vaccination campaign, we had a successful booster campaign, we're now having a successful children's campaign.
Yes, but don't forget we were also criticized.
That's right.
Because we were decided to get a third dose.
That's right. And that's exactly why this is so important, because, you know, the World Health Organization in some ways almost, you know, without necessarily naming us, but condemned us for making a decision to give third shots when so many people, even healthcare workers, the elderly in countries like Africa, don't have first shots. And for some reason, for all this time, as we've purchased very expensive vaccines from Pfizer, we have not contributed to COVAX, to the world's vaccine pots. And we haven't, you know, even really given very many to our neighbors in the Palestinian Authority. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about this? I mean, what is this? Do you feel like I do, that this is a huge win, both for Africa if they get the vaccines and also for us on the public relations front?
Yeah, I think, yes. This is the short answer. And I think also Israel has been at the forefront of vaccination, of giving all our data, okay, to the world so that people can learn. You know, I am in contact with experts from all around the world, and they always wait to see what is going to happen in Israel. And I can tell you that if I were to ask those experts and say, listen, we are willing to take the third shot and give you, the results we'll have, or do you think we should give up that and give those vaccines to other people? They say, listen, Israel is a very small country. We don't need your vaccines. Get vaccinated with the third dose and give us the results. It will be more important for the scientific and medical community. So again, I'm not trying to change how things are perceived. I'm just giving you my two cents here on what I believe can also happen. But in theory or in general, I do believe that it is important to give access to vaccines to as many people as, you know, as possible, so that we can, again, stop or at least reduce the number of variants that are being developed, because at the end of the day, we can give here the fifth and the sixth and the tenth dose. But if some parts of the world are not vaccinated enough, it will come back as a boomerang here, and we'll face what we are facing right now, a variant that we don't know if it will be more problematic than what we know already.
So without that world vaccination, we can pretty much assume that the virus is going to continue, and we can also assume that we're going to be hit over and over again. So I guess it does make sense to try to move that vaccination forward. Let's talk a little bit more, in terms of when we will know how bad this is. So you said we're evaluating a few questions. Infection, you know, is this going to infect quicker? Is this going to cause more severe disease? And will the vaccine work? When can we get the answers to these questions?
Yeah, it's hard for the public to understand that it takes time, because we are in an era where, you know, things are very rapid, very fast, et cetera, et cetera. But again, what we can say right now is that first, it seems really that it is more contagious. So we have to take this into account. Second, we don't believe so far there has been no report that the disease is more problematic, more severe, both from what we hear from abroad and both what we've seen in those two patients in Israel. Again, don't forget that we need to remember that, for example, in South Africa, if I remember correctly, most of the cases were students, and usually this is not representative of, you know, severe disease or vulnerable populations. So again, take that into account. But I really hope that it won't be more severe. And, you know, some have formulated the thought or the wish that it will be even less severe, and it would be a good thing to get infected with that Omicron variant. It's too early to tell.
Okay. And also too early to tell about the vaccines.
Yes.
Pfizer says it'll take another week. Moderna is already this morning. I read that the CEO had actually said that it's going to be less effective. So that is striking and scary. In that first case here in Israel, even the woman who traveled from the center to Eilat was triple vaccinated, which give us, I think, a little bit of a negative indication.
Yes. And also the WHO published a statement, I think yesterday, saying that there have been spotted some cases of reinfection,
meaning people who had COVID
and got with a different strain and got, you know, the Omicron.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and again, everyone is very cautious, because we know what we know that things can. You know, I just want to tell you. You know, we talked about the Lambda variant and the Mu variant and the Epsilon variant. You know, from New York, from Colombia, and at the end of the day, there is only one winner here so far, and this is a Delta variant. And we shouldn't forget that, because, you know, even Europe and the States and us are facing, you know, the Delta variant right now. So we should also think about how to fight this. But again, I think it will take a few more days so that we can get an initial in vitro assessment of the potency of antibodies from people that were vaccinated or convalescent. The potency of those antibodies to stop, you know, the possibility of those vaccines to stop the spread in a petri dish of the virus on cells. And if we get that information and compare that to what we know from the Delta and the Alpha variant, we might be able to give an initial assessment of that, but it will take a few more weeks to get an idea of what is going on in the population, hoping that, you know, it will not spread too much. But again, you know, we see the numbers and we know how it started 2 years ago. So we can also expect that. So it takes time.
You know, what about our decision to close the skies? You know, Israel right away, just like it's sort of reminiscent, right, of the first wave, we closed our skies immediately. We blocked out the foreigners. But what I understand from the health ministry is that really half the cases came from abroad, but half the cases didn't. So did we do the right thing?
So far, until we know better, I think it is a good decision. I think it's painful for people that live out of tourism. I'm extremely sorry about that, honestly. And I'm also sorry about the fact that people cannot see, for example, their families, etc. You know, being myself, someone that came from abroad, from France, and you know, I have family that was supposed to come, etc. I feel for other people that are in this situation. But on the other hand, I think that 2 weeks is a good time to get some initial answers. We will not be able to stop the importation of variants, as you said. But I want to take you back in February 2020, March 2020, when we started closing our sky and borders. And it was the right decision. It was the right call. We were among the first to do that. And I think that that helped us minimizing the first wave, the effect of the first wave, the impact of the first wave with, I'm sorry that I'm going to use this word, only 300 deaths compared to, I don't know if you remember what was happening in Italy or in Spain or then in Europe, in New York and other places in the US. I think it was a right decision. Again, it's not a definitive solution. It's not, you know, it will not, you know, we have seen other countries like, for example, Australia and New Zealand that tried that zero COVID policy and it didn't work. So we are realistic. But at least to give us time to get ready for what could happen, I think it's a good decision.
It's interesting that you said that. I mean, and I guess I remember also in that first wave that we waited those 4 or 5 days with the United States because we didn't want to have a diplomatic crisis.
Exactly.
And 75% of that first wave's infection
came
because we left
the skies
open.
One of our mistakes.
Right.
That
so that's actually interesting what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense. So let's go back to vaccines now also.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned you before kind of nonchalantly, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th shots, as if we could just be inoculating every 6 months. Is that a good idea? I mean, we want to get to that point. Is that something we really can do with mRNA vaccines? And while you're talking about them, you talk a little bit about the antibodies waning because we are seeing them wane. So is that actually on the horizon?
Okay. So is that a good idea? I'm going to use one of the sentences I've been using the most in the past 2 years. I don't know. We do not know. We, you know, we have often I have discussions with other experts and we're trying to understand what will happen. And it's very difficult. And and people have, you know, to understand that we do not know everything. But when I'm saying that, it doesn't mean that we know nothing. That's often the mistake of people, especially people that are against vaccination. And that they tend to see things in black and white, while we know that in biology and immunology, things are more, you know, shades of gray. So what I can tell you right now is that we have to take into account that the most important component of our immune system in fighting this kind of infection is actually antibodies. So I think that it's true. The level of antibodies are a good surrogate to immunity against that kind of variant. Still, I want to say also that if you look at the statistics, you will discover that people at different ages are still protected with 2 doses, even now, from severe disease. Meaning that even with 2 doses, you get a kind of level of protection that is enough, at least to, I would say, even if it doesn't stop contamination right away, until it, the memory, the immune memory is kicking in, you can prevent a severe disease. So that's something I think that we also have to remember. Could be, for example, that for the next doses, fourth, fifth, if there are such, again, we'll decide that only certain populations will need that booster shot, and perhaps, you know, younger people won't need that, or people until the age of 50 or something won't need that because they already got three doses and the protection is enough a long time again. But if you ask my personal feeling, I do believe that we're gonna need, or I do believe that most of us will actually be exposed to COVID-19, and only thanks to vaccine and that kind of natural exposure we'll reach a state that will help us getting in the situation where the virus is endemic, meaning that it's like we know from flu, etc., etc. I don't believe, I'm tempted to say, anymore in herd immunity, because I don't think that, you know, saying it's not a virus like, you know, measles or something like that, when you say, you know, if you get 95% of the population vaccinated, you know, the virus. I don't think we are there, because I see variants that are spreading, etc., etc., even in vaccinated person, though I want to stress that it's important to get vaccinated. It's much better to get vaccinated than not vaccinated. Again, black and white situation where people say, oh, if a vaccinated person can get the virus, I won't get vaccinated. That's not the way you should think.
Because you're saying it stops severe disease. So
it stops severe disease. And also, it's relative. It's a proportion. Even every day, when you get on your car, okay, do you really think I'm going to have an accident or not? Because I know that one person, because, you know, I could have said, okay, don't get into your car, because every day one person, at least in Israel, is dying, unfortunately, from a car accident. You don't think about that. You think relatively proportionally. So again, here too, we have to think proportionally. True, a vaccine perhaps can't stop 100% of the infections or severe disease, et cetera, et cetera, but it can stop 95%. And I would rather take those 95% chance than being, I would say, naked in front of such a virus like COVID-19.
You know, when you think about stopping severe disease, I mean, wasn't that anyway the original intention of the vaccines?
Yes.
Do we never even thought this was going to eradicate? This isn't a polio vaccine.
Yeah, I know. So that's the point. You know, we're not talking about a DNA vaccine that is very stable, et cetera, et cetera. We're talking about an RNA vaccine that can mutate. And we're talking about a respiratory virus while we're getting shots in our muscles. I mean, I would be very happy to see a nasal vaccine that would kind of mimic natural infection, that would actually boost our immunity in our lungs, okay?
By the way, that's what NRX is working on. You know, the BreLife vaccine,
yes.
The Israeli vaccine, actually they are testing the nasal vaccine is what I was told.
Yes, and I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, we need to look at, you were asking, should we get, you know, other doses of vaccine? Again, I don't know. Perhaps we'll decide that it would be best, again, to get a nasal vaccine for our fourth dose. If there is something like that, perhaps it would be best to mix and match. I don't know. We don't know yet.
How many years does that take? I mean, because when you look back at vaccine production, really gaining that kind of information could take a decade or more. No?
No, I don't think so.
Less
again,
now?
Again, I'll be less scientific now, and I will say that a miracle has happened because we had access to potent vaccines within less than a year.
Right, which saved tens of thousands of lives.
Exactly. So 100%. That's something that we should not disregard. Again, what will happen next? We have to be patient. I think that we're running a marathon. I think you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. We're running a marathon against COVID-19. People have to be patient. We know that in, you know, past epidemies, past, you know, I would say, you know, the Spanish flu, for example, or, you know, Black Death, et cetera, et cetera. We know that it didn't end within a year. Okay, it took several years, several waves. So I think we have to get ready to that. I think that it is very difficult for people to understand this because we've been spoiled. we've been spoiled in most of the places in the world, you know, with the advancement of medicine, of antibiotics, of vaccines. But don't forget, in certain parts of the world, you know, number one killer are infectious diseases.
In Israel, by the way, we're among the highest, and I think we are the highest in the OECD by 4 times, of people dying from infectious disease, even in this country, largely due to overcrowding, cleanliness, people in the hallways and hospitals, you know, some of the things that we could deal with, but we don't.
So we have to remind that, and that it is a fight that we are trying to fight with everything we have, with technological advancement. It's amazing to see what we have right now. Perhaps it's not enough, but it is, and I want to stay optimistic, a good start.
Well, I think that's great, you know, optimism, and it's always good to end on an optimistic note. So I do want to bring us toward the end, but I do want to ask about one other thing, which is also optimistic, which is that we've launched a children's vaccination campaign, which seems to be something that's also picking up steam around the world as well as here in the country. Reports are showing that kids are coming out, not in droves, you know, it's not a mass vaccination campaign yet, but kids are showing up and they are getting vaccinated. So talk a little bit about that. You know, what is the impact going to be? And are you, you know, as an expert in this topic, happy with the amount of kids that are getting vaccinated right now? Do you think kids should be getting vaccinated? And what do we need to be doing different to move that forward?
I will say that I have positive feelings toward vaccination in general, and I think that it is important for people to take a decision that is taking into account benefit and risks. And I think that one of the problems we've been hearing, you know, all around is that kids are never sick with COVID-19, and this is false. Unfortunately, even if it is a rare disease, we know that kids can get into severe condition. We had like 200 cases in Israel of severe conditions. Death, true. Most of the kids that died in Israel had some comorbidities and underlying conditions. That's true. But we also know that there is that PIMS condition, which can be fatal, as we saw in Israel with 300 kids that got into PIMS. And there is no way to predict what will happen. You can have an asymptomatic infection, and 3 weeks after that, you will develop a PIMS, which is a multi-inflammatory syndrome. And don't forget also the long COVID, which is also prevalent. And we still do not have enough tools to diagnose that. So I'm saying, you know, when you look at all those things, and I have been asked by parents, you know, aren't you afraid of long-term side effects from the vaccine? And I'm saying, listen, first, billions of people got those vaccines. So far, looks okay. True, those are not kids, but physiologically speaking, we are kind of close. Extremely close. Second thing, I think that when you look at the data from the clinical trial of Pfizer, true, it was only a few thousand kids, but again, we didn't see anybody. No problems there. So it's also a good sign. Now, the United States has vaccinated a few million kids, I think around 3, and we're waiting to see what is going to happen with the second dose. But again, so far, you know, this is a vaccine that has been under a lot of scrutiny, and it's so far, it's okay. And I want to answer and finish by that. True, we might not know the long-term effect of that vaccine, but I don't think that there are any, because we know the mechanisms. We know that this is RNA. We know that it is actually unstable in our body within 48 hours. It is more or less destroyed. But you do not know. We do not know the long-term effects of COVID. When you read reports of a virus harming the vascularization of our brain, of the brain of people that were infected, when you see so many and talk to people, so many side effects, my personal feeling, again, is that I would prefer get vaccinated or have my kids, all my kids are vaccinated, by the way, than, you know, get the disease.
You know, it makes sense. And you just the this morning, I was actually speaking to a researcher at Asuta Ashdod Hospital, a Samson Asuta Ashdod Hospital down in the south. And they just had new research come out very small cohort, just four women, mm-hmm. but pregnant women who got COVID. And they have, we knew already that there is, double the likelihood of having stillbirth if you mm-hmm. have COVID. But they have actually seen, looked into the causal effect, what is causing that. And what they found was that the virus was passing into the placenta itself and causing tissue damage to the placenta and literally killing the baby, killing the fetus. And so, this is something that the researchers have said they had actually not seen before. Many viruses, of course, get into the fetus itself, but here causing such damage to the placenta is new with COVID. And they said this is another argument, of course, for vaccinating, because even though really the reason to vaccinate as a pregnant woman is to prevent the woman from having the severe disease, which we've seen so many cases of women in the ICU delivering early. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing now that, of course, it impacts the baby as well.
Yes, and this, with time, we accumulate more and more evidences. But again, when it comes back to 5 to 11, I think that, and that's what I was, that was a message that I was trying to convey. I think that parents need to take a very, a decision that is based on information, on real information, not what is going on social media with a pediatrician, etc. I'm not saying go now and immunize your kids and everything will be okay, and I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying at least consider doing that. And I think that in Israel also this is, the way it's going. There's been a lot of information, but so far, I haven't seen, authorities pushing really or committing any coercive means to have parents vaccinating their kids. Let's wait and see. But I'm hopeful that this is a solution for parents, the Amazing. Right solution.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, because giving information, which is what we're trying to do here, is exactly what is important for managing this virus, living through this virus, if we can do that, Bezrat Hashem, God willing. So thank you again so much, Professor Cohen, for being here with us today. This has been Mayan Hoffman on the Health and Wellness Podcast, and I appreciate all our listeners for joining us.
Happy Hanukkah. On an optimistic note, we have succeeded in we won that war against Greeks, so we will also win that war against Greek letters like Omega and Omicron, etc.
Amen to that. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everybody. We look forward to talking to you next time.